Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Three Inning Save podcast. We are part of the Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Eric Steven, and with me today is the handsome Jacob Burtz, as people like to say. Brian Salvador produces us. Yeah, that's right. He's the You're the beauty. You're the beauty. I'm the beast. Wait, or am I the? Which one's the brains and the brawn? Then I'm confused. Anyway,
you Brian can be Salvatore.
Brian Salvatore is our producer. He'll figure out which one of us is which. We do have a Dodgers rewind for you today. We're going to look back at Stan Javier, who was a switch-hitting outfielder who played for parts of three seasons for the Dodgers in the 1990s. During Jacob's childhood, but definitely not when he was actively watching baseball. So
this is one of those where we're both maybe learning. We probably had just moved to LA.
All right. So Javier was involved in a number of trades in his career, five in total, including two with the Dodgers. They acquired him and then they traded him away eventually. We'll get to those. So he played for 17 years in the majors for eight different teams. And he played all three outfield spots. He played a little bit like as a utility guy too, but his bread and butter was pretty much in the outfield. How I got to choosing Javier for this week's rewind has to do with Eddie Murray, of course, as most things do. He's my favorite player of all time. Eddie Murray, a couple weeks back, he turned 68 years old on February 24th, which is a reminder for me to bring up that he led the major leagues with a .330 batting average. I think it's been a few podcasts since I've did that. He did that in 1990. He did not win a batting title that year. However, Stan Javier was tied for second on the Dodgers that year with a .304 batting average. Now, I will note that if you round it to another decimal, point after the decimal, he hit .304.3. Mm-hmm. There was also one other .304.3 hitter with the Dodgers. There was also another .303.9 hitter with the Dodgers, but three .304 hitters, right? That's what I'm getting at. Can you name either or both of the non-Javier .304 hitters for the 1990 Dodgers?
Maybe I can name one. We'll find out when it's time. But that's right. I have so much to learn first.
Yeah, I need to introduce you and the audience to Stan Javier. I was intrigued, like, you know, at first I was like, what do I know about Stan Javier? Like, is this enough for a rewind? And then I was reading his baseball reference bullpen, the sort of pseudo wiki of baseball reference where it has like extra info about the players and stuff. I'm just going to read this, what it says. Quote, he was originally signed as an amateur free agent by the Cardinals in March of 1981, but after the 1982 season, he was sent to the New York Yankees alongside infielder Bobby Meacham, another good prospect, in return for three minor leaguers of little value. The deal was, in fact, compensation for the Cardinals having snatched excellent young outfielder Willie McGee from the Yankees the previous offseason in return for sore-armed pitcher Bob Sykes. After McGee had emerged as a star in the Cardinals' win in the 1982 World Series, Yankees owner George Steinbrenner was fuming, threatening to sue the Cardinals for having swindled him out of McGee. The deal was the Cardinals' way of making amends and making sure Steinbrenner did not use his contacts around baseball to have the original deal for McGee overturned. This seemed very dubious. It was presented so matter-of-factly. I couldn't find anything very specifically about this. Like, I was trying to just look at, like, Steinbrenner backlash, like, looking at old news reports. Now, like, I will just say, look, I get it. Willie McGee pisses people off. That's what he does. He robbed me of things in my childhood. He robbed Pedro Guerrero of the 1985 MVP. Not really. He did win MVP, but then he won the batting title in 1990 that Eddie Murray did not, because McGee was traded late in the year to the A's. His total batting average was less than Eddie Murray, but because he was traded to the American League, his National League average stood up as the National League lead. I'm over it, though. But, you know, Steinbrenner, understandably mad. He was very impulsive. So McGee was a first-round pick in 1977 of the Yankees. He spent 5 years there in the minors before getting traded. Or actually, five. He was traded before the 82 season for a 27-year-old pitcher. That's Bob Sykes. He actually never pitched in the majors again. He did pitch in the minors in 82 a little bit. Then he was kind of done. On his baseball reference bullpen page, this is how they describe this. Yankees owner George Steinbrenner was furious about the deal, feeling the Cardinals had sent him damaged goods in Sykes and threatened to have the trade canceled. To comfort him, the Cardinals pulled off another deal in which they sent two top prospects to New York, Stan Javier and Bobby Meacham, in return for three minor leaguers of little pedigree. So it's when the Yankees traded McGee, he hadn't played in the majors yet. He found his way to the majors in 82 with the Cardinals. He finished third in Rookie of the Year. Then he like stood out in the World Series. He hit homers. He made great catches. They won the World Series. So it's like immediately they're like, oh God, I could have had this guy. So Steinbrenner, like, he had reason to be mad, right? So, McGee had a long career. He was a four-time All-Star, the aforementioned MVP, the aforementioned batting title, but this isn't about McGee. It's about Stan Javier. During that 82 World Series, when everyone's like, They go to Steinbrenner when McGee's having a breakout series. Like, hey, what do you think about this? And he told New York Newsday, he's with St. Louis, and so is the scout that told us he'd never make our team. But then in the same article in the New York Daily News, the scout was Wilfredo Calvino. He had since moved to the Cardinals. He said he was let go by the Yankees in December 1980, which was before the trade of McGee, a year before. And he said he told the Yankees that he could be a great player. Quote, I would have told that to Mr. Steinbrenner too, but the one time I met him, he never asked me about baseball. So then I looked at Stan Javier's Sabre bio, which is written by Richard Creechy. Quote, Cardinals GM Joe McDonald said the trade had nothing to do with the McGee trade. This is the trade from Javier from the Cardinals to the Yankees. On the other hand, back to the Sabre bio. On the other hand, the Sporting News in 1985 reported that the Javier Meacham trade to the Yankees was indeed related to the McGee deal in 81 as a condition for George Steinbrenner to back Cardinals owner August Bush's quest to fire Commissioner Bowie Kuhn. So there's intrigue at the Palace involving Stan Javier and Willie McGee, my mortal nemesis. But let's get to Stan Javier. So, he signed by the Cardinals out of the Dominican Republic in March 1981. That was notable in itself because his dad is Julian Javier, who was the second baseman for the Cardinals for a dozen years, including all of the 1960s. That was when the Cardinals went to three World Series. They won two of them. Julian Javier named his son after Stan Musial, as they were overlapped with the Cardinals for four seasons. Stan Javier had a .401 on-base percentage in the minors in his career. He made it to the majors at 20 with the Yankees in April 1984. He got into seven games. He only started once. He was one for seven. It was in April. It wasn't like an end-of-season cup of coffee, but he didn't really play much. But at the winter meetings in December 84, the Yankees went for it. They traded for Rickey Henderson, who was like peak of his powers, Rickey Henderson. He was so good. But the Yankees, it was Stan Javier, Jose Rijo, future Dodger Jay Howe, Eric Plunk, and Tim Bertzis for Rickey Henderson and a pitcher named Burt Bradley. This, at the time, was viewed as an overly impulsive Steinbrenner move. There was also there was just like animosity with Henderson in New York. He was injured, and the Yankees like misdiagnosed it, I believe, at the time. And then, of course, he got accused of being like a malingerer. And like, but if you look, like when he was on the field, he was so good. His first year there, he was, I think he was 9.9 baseball reference war. He probably should have won the MVP over Don Mattingly. Don Mattingly drove in 145 runs, great year in his own right. Ricky Henderson scored 146 runs. He was on base allowing – he was great. He had like – I believe he went – in his first year, I believe he was 28 or maybe it was 24 home runs and 80 steals. Like just ridiculous numbers for Ricky Henderson. Anyway, but you also have to look – this is also in the 80s were weird. The Yankees get to the World Series. Yeah. It's my favorite decade of baseball, but it was whack job. The Yankees lost to the Dodgers in the 81 World Series. They signed Dave Winfield, who Steinbrenner hated, literally hired private investigators to like dig up dirt on. The Yankees in the 1980s won the most games in Major League Baseball. But outside of 81, they never made the playoffs again. Like, but also, it was only two division winners in each league, and there's no other way to make playoffs. So if it was like in a modern lens, if you look, you're like, these guys would have been perennial playoff team, right? And like they would have been like in the mix and probably, I mean, you know, maybe still viewed in a negative way or whatever, but it's just a weird time. Like it never worked out. Like when they were good, someone else was a little better, you know, that kind of a thing. But yeah, so but then also part of this trade, so like Riho and Javier, and to a lesser extent Jay Howell, they were seen as the ones who got away from the Yankees, right? And they're like, oh, stupid Steinbrenner making his move. It wasn't like the Ken Phelps for Jay Buhner style move, because look, Henderson was great. Like I believe Henderson like led the majors in WAR in 85 and 89, which was last year in the Yankees. But they also traded him to Oakland mid-year 89. But he's also so good in the other 3 years. But Riho became one of the best pitchers in baseball for like a 5-7 year stretch with the Reds. He also won a World Series against the A's in 1990. Like neither Riho or Javier like did much with the A's. Javier did okay in his first 4 years with the A's, but it was like a 74 OPS plus. He couldn't quite get consistent playing time. So then that brings us to 1 month into the 1990 season. That's when Javier was traded to the Dodgers, which is a story in its own right, and we will get to that after the break.
Oh, boy.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Okay, so Jacob, are you aware that the Dodgers won the World Series in 1988? Was two-year-old Jacob just all over it? Just
2-year-old Jacob was, but you know, yeah. I've heard things about the past, the good old days.
Sure. So Imagine 12-year-old me,
mm-hmm.
peak of the world, winning the World Series that year. And
happy
then,
as can be.
And then the Dodgers traded a player who I admired from afar. Is one of my favorite non-Dodgers at the time. They traded for Eddie Murray. And so I'm like, oh, unstoppable dynasty in route, right? And then, but then they fizzled in 1989, right? They finished under 500. Expectations were higher in 1990. So they got off to a 14-11 start, but then they lost six straight. So they're kind of floundering a little bit in May. So May 13th, they traded their starting second baseman, who was Willie Randolph, to the A's, an older Willie Randolph. He was 35, but they traded it. It was a straight-up deal for Javier, who's 26. It was met very tepidly by the Dodgers. Bill Plaschke was not a columnist back then. He was the beat reporter for the Times. And this is from his story. Quote, "The only player who seemed truly happy with the move was Randolph. Juan Samuel wasn't thrilled with the idea of moving from center field back to second base so quickly. Kirk Gibson said he didn't want to discuss playing center field until he's healthy. Javier said he wants a chance to play every day. The rest of the team didn't seem to understand." The whole article is like filled with quotes going, "I don't know why we made this trade. This is a weird trade." Right? Like, it's just like, I guess. They're like, yeah, we needed to make a trade, but really, Randa? Why would we trade him, you know? It was very odd. But so, look, as a just sort of painting the picture here. So Juan Samuel, he was a bad second baseman defensively, I think, for the years with the Phillies. He moved to center field in 1989 with the Phillies. Then he was traded to the Mets midseason. The Dodgers traded for him in December before 1990. Mike Marshall was in that deal the other way. Kurt Gibson, his impact with the Dodgers is obvious, right? Wins MVP his first year, obviously the home run. They win a World Series right away. But he also followed that with two injury-plagued years. So it wasn't all rosy after that. He played in 150 games in 1988. He played in 160 games combined in the next 2 years. So he had knee surgery in the summer of 89, missed the last like 2+ months. So that made him start the 1990 season on the injured list too. His first game that year was June 2nd. So this is about like 3 weeks after this trade. So at the time he's like, hey, like, let's not pencil me into center field here just yet, right? Like, because I don't even know when I'm going to be healthy. And so like, but also he probably said it in an abrasive manner because that was his style at the time. But from 1984 to 89, he had started a total of 35 games in center field. He was mostly on the corners. So that would have, it was like a big thing. He did end up playing mostly center field when he came back, but he also got some days off and missed some more time with injuries. But so, yeah, like I said, that story included all sorts of quotes like, I don't know why we made this trade, but it ended up working out pretty good for the Dodgers, especially in 1990. So Randolph that year, he hit 257, 331, 318 with the A's. He wasn't done yet. But he did have a great year the next year with the Brewers. Then he was pretty good in 92 for the Mets before he retired. But then, like, Javier was mostly a part-time player with the Dodgers. He had decent stretches of filling in, especially in center field when, like, Gibson couldn't go. He ended up starting a total of 58 games that year for the Dodgers. It's about, like, 40% of the time after he came. His best year at the plate was 1990, both to that point and ended up being in his career. So he hit the aforementioned 304 with a 384 on base, 399 slugging. That's a 119 OPS plus in 321 plate appearances. And that's basically a half season. And he stole 15 bases with the Dodgers. His 4.0 baseball reference war with the Dodgers ranked third on the team. Eddie Murray was first that year. He was solid on both offense and defense. But that brings us back to the trivia question. Three different Dodgers hit 304 in 1990. One is Stan Javier. Who are the other two? And just as a point of reference, Eddie Murray was the leader on the team hitting 330.
Brett Butler.
So, Butler did not join the Dodgers until 91.
Well, then I have no guesses for you, Eric.
Okay. Let me see if I can.
You and I were talking a little bit before this. 90 and 91 are these like lost eras for me where I know little.
I will say this is, you know, non-qualified, independent. So I will say one of the 304 batters, in fact, the one who matched Stan Javier at 304-3 was a pitcher.
Oral Hershiser.
No, but I'm looking to see. Oh, actually, hurt. No, 90. So you picked a bad year because 90 was the year Oral Hershiser had shoulder surgery. So he only pitched, he pitched 4 games and then he was out.
Fernando.
It was Fernando. He actually matched, Javier exactly. He had a quarter of the at bats and a quarter of the hits. So, and then the other person who hit 303.9 was pinch hitter extraordinaire Lenny Harris, who had kind of a pretty good run there for a bit with the Dodgers.
That's what again, just like I think you've asked one other 1990 Dodger question. I just remember thinking like, I can name Oral Fernando, and then I thought Brett Butler, but I guess that's 91. And then, like, that's it. That's all I got. That's all I got.
So,
because I knew it's. Yeah, go ahead.
It wasn't this year, but Mike Sharperson was next in the batting average at 297. He made an all-star team in 92. He was the only Dodgers all-star that year. Very surprised guy because he was a utility guy, and that was a very bad year. But I mentioned Javier was third in war on Baseball Reference for the Dodgers that year. Eddie Murray was first. Cal Daniels was second. He hit 296. He had an amazing year, and then he just his knees gave out after that. 155 OPS plus, 27 homers. He was really good. But anyway.
Tell me more about Stan Javier. I'm enjoying this.
After 1990.
More than the trivia, that's for sure.
Yeah. After 1990, the lost year for Jacob, Stan Javier struggled with the Dodgers, at least. He was reduced to a part-time role on a very good 91 team. So in the offseason between 90 and 91, the aforementioned Brett Butler was he signed with the Dodgers. The Dodgers also signed Darryl Strawberry, whose homecoming was supposed to go swimmingly. It did for a year, and then that did very much did not. So they contended for the NL West till the final weekend. But like with those two guys in the outfield, it meant like less playing time for Javier. So Javier that year was mostly a pinch hitter. He pinch hit 59 times. Chris Gwynn had pinch hit 61. Those were like the two most oft used pinch hitters on that team. But as a pinch hitter, Javier was only 5 for 52, 0.96. It's rough. It's rough work out there. In 91 and 92 combined with the Dodgers, Javier hit just 201, 270, 286. That's a 60 WRC plus. That's like Alfredo Griffin territory. It's bad news. He only started 5 games in the first half of the 92 season with the Dodgers. So he was kind of looking for a way out, and the Dodgers eventually obliged him. July 2nd, 92, they traded him to the Phillies for pitcher Steve Searcy. Also, Julio Peguero was later added as a player to be named later. The timing for this was incredible just because of the where it was in like LA history. The Phillies were in LA to play the Dodgers, so that's always good when you literally trade a guy and they just literally go across the stadium to the other clubhouse. So Javier started all 5 games in that series. He was 3 for 4 with an RBI in that first game. The Dodgers did win it, though. He was 6 for 17 with 5 walks in the series, so he reached base half the time. He did his part. The Dodgers won the first 3 games. The Phillies won the last 2. Now, this was also a weird stretch because the Dodgers had 4 doubleheaders in the span of a week. One of them was against the Phillies that in the second day of that series. They were makeup games from April because of the LA riots after the Rodney King verdict. And they had to postpone 4 games. So the Dodgers had one doubleheader against Phillies on July 2nd, and then 3 in a row against the Expos on July 6th to the 8th. This is from another Plaschke-like story about the trade in the LA Times. Quote, "They needed his roster spot for the 3 minor league pitchers who will be used during the doubleheaders, and they didn't need a $715,000 salary on the bench." Now the $715,000 wasn't necessarily that high, although the major league minimum was only $109,000 back then, so it was reasonably high, but he was the 19th highest paid Dodger, so he wasn't like weighing the Dodgers down, right?
Right.
Payroll wise. They had 16 players making over $1 million. The team's lone all-star that year in 92, the aforementioned Mike Sharperson, he was only making $587,500. That was a very bad team. They lost 99 games. It was the first time they finished in last place since 1905. It was so bad. they had the worst record in baseball, but because the draft order alternated by league, it was the American League's turn the next year to have number one. So the Mariners had number one, and they took Alex Rodriguez while the Dodgers took Darren Dreyfuss. Anywho, but back to the point about the doubleheaders. So Pedro Astacio was one of those minor leaguers. He started 2 of the doubleheader games, including his major league debut on July 3rd against Phillies. He shut them out with 10 strikeouts, a very, very memorable debut. Kip Gross was mostly a reliever with the Dodgers, but after 2 months in AAA, he was called up to start one of the games against the Expos as well. So it's just like fun how like these things sort of I had forgotten about that. That was a pretty crazy like year in general, but like I had forgotten about the having to reschedule the with the doubleheaders and stuff. It was kind of a wild week. But after 92, Javier did have a nice run. He was basically a league average hitter for nine more seasons, right? And he averaged about two WAR per year. So he's like a solid regular. Through 91, Javier only had an 81 OPS plus in his career. So he did really well after that. So again, he played 17 years for eight teams, 1,358 hits, 246 steals. He totaled 25 baseball reference WAR, 19 Fangraphs WAR. Also note, after his playing days, he was the GM for the Dominican Republic for the World Baseball Classic in 2006 and 2009. He bought a Dominican Winter League team, the Gigantes del Chibao, or damn it, I always forget how to, it's C-I-B-A-O, Chibao. I forget how to pronounce that. I should have had it. He was also later the vice president for the Toros del Este in the Dominican Winter League. So he's been very involved. He also briefly worked with the Major League Players Union after his playing days. So I would say that's a very, very full baseball life and a multi-generational baseball family. So that's the story of Stan Javier. What do you think?
I you know, we've done, I feel like the late 80s, early 90s have been a bit bereft in the rewind, and I think we should fix that. So my challenge to you is next Dodgers Rewind, I want to have played for the 1990 Dodgers, and I want the trivia question to not be about the 1990 Dodgers.
Whoa, all right. That's very specific, but it's very doable. Well, it's weird because like that was my also my prime like baseball, like all-consuming time, you know, like, sure. I mean, look, I obviously do more now because yeah, of being involved, but like, it took up so much of my life, right? And like that, those were my teams and I was all over it. That said, I didn't really have much of a memory of Stan Javier as a Dodger. That's one of the reasons I like doing these, because it's like, oh yeah, like I kind of remember, you know, that, like that kind of stuff. So I do like these, and I think that's a fruitful era because I experienced it, but also it's a good way to remember what I might have forgotten. But that's it for us this for this episode. We look back at Stan Javier. Thank you all for listening to the Three Inning Save podcast. Once again, we're part of the Fans First Sports Network. We'll be back with our regular episode in a few days. Thanks for listening, everybody.